Hello and welcome to Switch It on ESPNcricketinfo.com. We're trying something new this week. We're coming live to you over Facebook and we've got plenty to chat about. I'm joined by Andrew Miller and George De Bell. We're going to look ahead to the start of England's international summer where they face Ireland. We're going to look back on the early stages of the county season, also one or two of the other big stories floating around the world of cricket. It's been a fairly quiet time for England since they last played international cricket. They had that three-match series in the West Indies, which they won comfortably. But this month starts to build up proper to the Champions Trophy, where they are one of the favourites. They have three ODIs against South Africa after these two against Ireland. We'll come to Ireland in a little while. They have a huge summer coming up for themselves for a variety of reasons as well. But let's start with England. The Champions Trophy squad had no real surprises in it. Stephen Finn overlooked in favour of Jake Ball and Mark Wood returning. George, is that how you expected the squad to unfold?
Yeah, and I think it's a good squad. We know England's batting's pretty strong. We know it's deep. I think they needed Wood and Willie to be fit and firing, to have a bit of bite with the ball. I think that's their slightly weaker suit. And to, at this stage, be at full strength, yeah, really encouraging.
Of those 15, Andrew, that are in the Champions Trophy, Joss Butler, Ben Stokes and Chris Wokes won't be in the Ireland matches. They've been given permission to stay at the IPL. Without going into the whys and wherefores of the IPL too much, is that a right and pragmatic decision from the ECB, given that those three are nailed on starters? Is it a sensible decision to allow him to stay at the IPL?
Well, to judge by Ben Stokes' form out there, absolutely. I was talking to Owen Morgan last night, the England kit launch. The New Balance obviously brought out their new kit. They had their flagship store in Oxford Street for the launch last night. And Morgan has been waxing lyrical about the IPL for years, literally years. I mean, he was basically England's pioneer along with KP in terms of sort of breaking the barriers and getting England out there. And he was able to, you know, make the very valid point that if you get a man like Ben Stokes scoring a 60-ball 100 with Stephen Smith and MS Dhoni as his sidekicks, you know, outclassing two of the classiest players in the world, the sort of confidence he's going to get from that sort of performance, he will bring that straight back. I mean, it's 20 over cricket, 50 over cricket. It doesn't really matter, I don't think, in terms of the huge hype and the huge expectations on him with that price tag as well. He's lived up to expectations, and not just him. Chris Wokes has had a good time of it. He's picked up cheap wickets and really played a part. I think it makes sense to keep them out there, to be perfectly honest. It really is about forging that big game mentality and getting used to being expected to perform in front of huge crowds and delivering, and they've done that.
Do you think there's any danger, George, that the slightly disjointed nature to the start of the summer, a few players flying back and forth, Morgan's coming back, isn't he, and then going back again for another game, I think the IPL, then they've got before the camp, the training camp in Spain, any danger that leaves England a little vulnerable in these two games against Ireland?
Potentially, but I don't see that as a bad thing. I think that's a good thing, potentially, isn't it? The other people, their bench strength is tested. You want them to be put under pressure. I don't think it's the strongest Irish team they've ever played against. And so I don't think you'll do them any harm to be tested. You know, when we talk of the positives of the IPL experience, there are some. There are some downsides as well, but there are some sensible reasons for doing it. I do think, though, that the underlying reason they're allowed or even encouraged to go is because the ECB will probably be trying to hold back the tide otherwise. And so they're making a positive out of a negative and saying, we understand you can make a lot of money doing this. There are some decent reasons for doing it, so we're going to embrace them. And I think that's reasonable. I think that's absolutely fair. You could argue the conditions are quite different, and you could argue that they might get a bit more experience playing 50 over cricket here. I'm pretty ambivalent either way, to be honest.
Contrary to that, there's a lot of players going to be flying in from the IPL for the Champions Trophy. It's only that it's in England hosting it that we're probably talking about the fact that the players are staying at the IPL. You've got host of the Aussies will be coming, a host of the South Africans will be coming from the IPL. So it's not as though it's almost an even playing field, really.
Yeah, although I did a game the other day at Trent Bridge, and I think there were 8 people involved who were in Champions Trophy squads and 18 internationals. So yeah, look, the nature of modern cricket is that people travel a lot, they travel fast. And also there's been a slight homogenisation of pitches in white ball cricket as well, hasn't there? They're not going to do a lot.
We're not going to talk about the heavy roller, George. We're really not.
We're not.
Not for our live audience.
The white ball doesn't swing a lot.
They don't deserve that.
The white ball doesn't swing a lot, so it's not as if, I don't think, I'll be surprised if, you know, English or Welsh conditions are a factor. I don't think they will be.
one of the interesting little undercurrents to come out of the squad selection, it sort of got buried a little bit, was the comments regarding, or rather the decision that Sam Billings is going to keep ahead of Bairstow in the two Ireland matches. A couple of lines from James Whittaker, the selector, suggesting that Bairstow was a bit disgruntled by this, been usurped by Billings as the backup keeper. What do you make of that situation, barring it just being another example of England's strength and depth at the moment? Is a disgruntled Bairstow a good Bairstow to have, or is he someone you want to keep happy? I mean, he's been quite feisty about his keeping role.
He has. I don't know. I'm a big Sam Billings fan. I think it would be great for England to find a way to get him into their team. But frankly, they've got so much strength in that top order that he can't. I mean, you can't get rid of Joss Butler to get Sam Billings in, and no one else justifies being dropped. So, yeah, it is a case of just building out that bench strength. If Sam Billings is going to be a regular for England, it may well be he has to take the gloves. I mean, you know, Joss Butler is the other keeper, but he is such a gun that I'd be tempted to think that, you know, he's got to be a frontline batsman in that format. So I don't see a problem with giving him a chance. Let's face it, Bairstow is streets ahead when it comes to Test cricket at the moment because of his formidable performance last year. He's a shoo-in for seven Tests plus the Ashes, assuming his form remains even remotely stable. So, you know, he may gripe a little bit about missing out here and there in white ball cricket, but you know he's still very central to England's plans for what's going to be an incredibly busy summer. I don't think England are going to, let's face it, the players are not going to be complaining by the end of the summer they've been underused, I don't think.
Do you think it is Bairstow and Billings at the moment that are going to be the two reserves once the Champions Trophy starts? That top six and probably Moeen at seven is nailed on, do you think?
I can see a situation where they won't play two spinners occasionally, but I think they probably will. I don't quite understand the Bairstow thing. I don't think it's quite consistent, apart from the fact that Paul Farbrace had said in the Caribbean that he saw Billings as the reserve keeper already. And I find that quite hard to square with having your test wicketkeeper as the third choice. I find that odd. And I don't completely understand it. And there's something about Bairstow's face that doesn't seem to fit, and I don't understand why.
It's been an interesting start to the summer for Bairstow. He's been caught in this rest play scenario. He would have been allowed to go to the IPL, yeah, but he wasn't released for a game or two against Yorkshire. So is that so? That was his indignation as well.
Well,
he wanted the rest, but
partnership with each other. But if he'd really wanted to play, I think they'd let him play.
Think there's a danger of that coming back to bite England? I mean, you've seen him a little bit a couple of times this season, haven't you? And your form is perhaps not quite what it was end of last year. Do you think there's a danger of being undercooked if needed?
Yes. What's he played? 5 days cricket this year? Yeah, I think it's a mistake, yeah. He looked, by his extremely high standards in the last 18 months, a little bit below his best, yeah. But he kept well, actually. It's like he doesn't quite have a role in one-day cricket. He was opening. And I don't see him being, I don't even see him being the reserve opener for England, to be honest. So it's an interesting situation. I wonder how long it will be. It's probably not relevant now, till Ben Foulkes is knocking on the door as well, because it won't be very long. It's a funny one, but he can never take form for granted. And that run of form he had last year, you know, maybe he didn't convert as many as those really good starts into hundreds. And that does tend to come back and bite you eventually. But look, not having a go at it, but I actually think he's a bit unlucky. Billings had quite a lot of opportunity and got starts and didn't go on. Bairstow, what, he got an 80-odd in the warm-up game, 85. He got a 50 when he played in India. I don't know what more he could do. And he could bat almost anywhere. But I don't see him as... We now know he's not the reserve keeper. I don't think he's the reserve opener. Don't know.
So England have got a month of fine-tuning ahead of them. We'll go back, we'll have a look at their hopes for the Champions Trophy in a bit more detail in a few weeks' time when they've played Ireland and South Africa. But let's just move on to Ireland a little bit now. You two have both been chatting to a couple of their senior pros over the last few days, Ed Joyce and Tim Murta. Andrew, do you, from talking to Tim Murta, who's, like I say, he's a senior player in the Ireland team, but he's only sort of come in the last few years, do you sense a belief that they can turn over England, or is there an understanding that they're in a bit of an interesting transitional phase in their game at the moment?
Yeah, reading between the lines of what he was saying, him and Stephen Finn were both put up by Royal London, and ironically, they're both Middlesex teammates, and they're going to be playing at Lords. So, you know, it's literally going to be a home from home for a lot of the Ireland squad, actually. There's several of the players, including, obviously, their ex-Ireland player, Owen Morgan, Middlesex affiliated. But he was, a little bit woebegone about their prospects, to be perfectly honest. I think, you know, it is 10 years now since Ireland burst onto the stage in stunning form at the 2007 World Cup. And, you know, 2011, that famous victory over England in Bangalore is quite distant now. And most of the guys who really put Ireland on the map are either getting on a bit or have gone already. So, you know, I think it's unfortunate for them that this invite has come so late. I think, you know, the ECB have treated Ireland a little bit sort of standoffishly very standoffishly for 10 years. I mean, their biennial one-match SOP game in Stormont or it just was really a nothing sort of gesture. So to finally invite them over at a time when they're just gone a little bit beyond their best. They got beaten by Afghanistan in a five-match series only last month. They're not the team they used to be, and that's a great shame because it's going to be a sellout at Lords. There's a real buzz around it because Ireland have certainly justified that buzz with the efforts they put into their cricket over the past decade. And you know, a lot of credit goes to Cricket Ireland for really driving their agenda. But you know, they can only do so much with the players that they've had, and a lot of them are a bit long in the tooth now, I'm afraid.
George, without perhaps giving away any secrets of what you're going to be writing for us later, you've been speaking to Ed Joyce, who's gone back and forth between England and Ireland over the last decade or so. Is there a sense there that a little bit of a concern about certainly the batting talent that's perhaps coming through in Ireland? They've got a few good young pace bowlers coming through, some of them we see on the county circuit. Do you think there's a little bit of concern about bringing through the next generation of batsmen?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I mean, they could definitely win. You know, England are favourites, of course they are. But Murta, early season, new ball, May, definitely they could win. And we've seen O'Brien innings remains one of the miracles of ODI cricket, really. I never thought he was particularly good, but then he played innings like that and he did it again, didn't he, for Gloucester a little while later. So, you know, they definitely have what it takes. Ed was extremely honest and frank. They're in a transition, yeah, and it's painful. I think it would be really unfortunate if anyone were to judge Irish cricket on this pathetically small snapshot, you know, two games. And in a way, it's more significant, you know, the point that Miller was making there, it's more significant the ECB's stance having changed. Because the ECB have been protectionist, I don't know, selfish, whatever, ignorant. And there's been a change of management there, and they've been much more responsible about their, you know, their duties to developing countries, and that's great, and that marks a real watershed. I think that marks more of a watershed actually than anything Ireland are doing. So I hope that if Ireland have a shocker, and they might, but I hope if they do have a shocker, that no one judges them unfit for elevation to Test cricket, because that would be an absurd conclusion to reach on the basis of a weekend. So to answer your question properly, there's a massive amount going right in Irish cricket, but they don't have brilliant players right now. But you could have said that about England lots of times. If Ireland get promoted to play Test cricket, they might lose. They might be whitewashed by Australia. They might go to Asia and lose five Tests in six. You know, we know another team have done that, don't we? No one's saying they could have their Test status taken away.
George has started to talk there about the elevation to Test status. In a way, the next few months for Ireland is more, it's not so much about what's happening on the field, though that's important. They've got the tri-series involving New Zealand and Bangladesh hot on the heels of the England games. It's almost what happens in June at those meetings, those further meetings, the ICC. There's been big decisions taken in the last week. It's been hinted at between you two that Ireland's standing as the leading associate has been knocked off its pedestal by Afghanistan in the last 18 months. It is surely right, though, that even if Ireland are going through a tricky time, and maybe you can say it's a shame the invites haven't come a bit earlier, it's surely right that there is now this renewed push to expand the test playing nations on the cards.
Absolutely, but it is, you do wonder how much comes down to timing with all of this. I mean, I think back to the last time there was a promotion of a test nation. It was Bangladesh, what was that, 17 years ago now, but they came from nowhere. Kenya were basically the team that was knocking on the door for a decade before that. And suddenly the timing was wrong, the politics was wrong as well, but you know, Kenya fell off a cliff, haven't been seen since. I don't think Ireland are going to do that for all sorts of reasons, not least the robust nature of their administration. You know, Warren Jutram is a fine, upstanding man who leads his board very well. But you know, you do worry about timing, and if the timing is wrong, and Ireland missed the boat, it would be very unfortunate and very unfair as well, given how hard this golden generation of 10 years basically are really punching against that glass ceiling. They've got cracks in it, but are they strong enough to really push through now with what remains of a solid squad?
It would be ridiculous not to give it to them. I mean, all over the world we see people trying to encourage nations that are already playing Test cricket to remain interested in it. We've got two teams who are desperate to play and seem to have an audience that want to watch it. What the hell are we stopping them for? And there will undoubtedly be a period where they get accustomed to it. But it is such a patently obvious decision that world cricket has in front of it that I can't believe they're going to screw it up again. And you know, compare it to the Bangladesh thing. Bangladesh, their elevation was largely on the back of a remarkable game of cricket in the World Cup against Pakistan. Surely we've learned the lessons. Surely they're not going to be judged on a snapshot. And they're not. But, you know, Warren would say, I spoke to him yesterday actually, he would say it would be disingenuous to pretend that the results of these games or the style of these games might not have some influence. So there's no complacency there at all. But you know, as I say, don't just judge them on these games. But also, you know, just talking like that, it sounds kind of arrogant. You know, say, don't just judge them like that, as if England had give them a bit of a whipping. Jeez, we've learned from experience, haven't we, that Ireland can beat England and beat them well.
So if we pick up on a bit of the ICC chat, the Ireland's future test status out of Afghanistan too came up in the recent round of meetings in Dubai. We won't go into everything that was discussed, but as ever, cricket politics is not a smooth ride. The new revenue share that's being talked about, try and do away with the big three scenario that cropped up a couple of years ago. The BCCI aren't happy at the moment with their sum that's been given to them, just under $300 million at the moment. Andrew, could that spell problems for the game and unhappy BCCI?
Yes, to be frank. I mean, I don't think there's a lot of bluster at the moment about them pulling out of the Champions Trophy. I'm willing to be proved wrong, but I imagine that's just bluster. I can't see India going quite that nuclear that soon. But having a grumpy India in control of the finances but not having control of the finances is not good for the game. I mean, we've already in a situation where Osman and Nagaraj wrote a piece about it last week that we have got so many T20 tournaments cropping up that if you try to stitch them back to back, there's actually no room left for international cricket. The calendar is saturated, and India, if they feel that, you know, we're not getting our fair share of the international calendar, they don't need international cricket in the same way that maybe they did before the IPL. It's the scene has changed to a degree. I do think, on the flip side, that there is still, you know, there's a very nationalistic tendency around India at the moment. I do think that a strong India needs a strong national team, and I think that there is an awful lot to be said for calling their bluff on that to a degree. But I don't think it is healthy to upset them. They do control 70-80% of the finances. It's, you know, and looking at the revenue share, what they want. And there's a very fine pie chart on Cricinfo at the moment that shows what they want, which is basically more than a quarter of the pot. It looks like a gargantuan sum of money, but what they're actually being given under the current revenue share is, you know, it looks not dissimilar to a sort of Trivial Pursuit board. It is.
Everyone wants their bit of cheese.
Everyone wants their bit of cheese, and it is a slender bit of cheese comparatively speaking. So I can see why they're a bit cross, to be perfectly honest.
George, but did there need to be this, or is there a good reason behind this trying to rebalance this game slightly? I think we all agree the big three wasn't great for the game in terms of the England, Australia, India controlling so much of the power and influence. is the rebalancing, the attempt to balance, to give countries their fair share in the long run a worthwhile thing the ICC are trying to do?
Yeah, of course. I don't think anyone, well, very few people would now try and defend what happened with the Big Three, where they were trying to give themselves an advantage in absolutely every way, financially, power. I think that we're still seeing some remnants of that. It's worth remembering that, you know, the ICC currently has a chairman who's from India. So
when he feels like it and not resigning.
Yeah, well, good for him for not clinging on to power. We've had a series of other chairmen who are desperate to remain at any cost to the game. And suddenly we have one who seems to be altruistic and he wants to go do other things with his life. Good on him. I think, you know, world cricket probably is going to owe him a huge amount. And he is plotting a tremendously difficult course through these complex issues. And undoubtedly, the negotiations are difficult. And, you know, I don't actually particularly have a view, but I do think that there is a history of the BCCI playing the nationalistic card in recent times. I think that's changing a bit. And it's a cultural clash, really. You have a situation where distribution of wealth is not seen in quite the same way in India and that it might be seen in other places. The Indian money is making the world go round in many ways, and you would like to persuade people that if they invest a bit more into developing countries and to other areas of cricket, that actually it'll be the best for everyone in the long term. And clearly the BCCI haven't been bought along entirely with that journey, and eventually you would hope that they would understand that what is happening is the best for everybody, and it's certainly not about being punitive, and at the moment they seem to think it is. So the negotiations, you know, they need some more work.
That is the big problem really, that the basically this, you know, there is absolutely nothing per se wrong with what is going on at the ICC at the moment. So the distribution of wealth and altruistic outlook is to be applauded, except it has been done at a time when the BCCI has been in crisis. You know, it's basically with the Loader Commission and the Supreme Court bearing down on the BCCI. Essentially, the picked on nations at the ICC have turned on the bully at a moment of weakness. And you can applaud them for their timing, but that doesn't mean that the bully's not going to suddenly rise up and hit them back doubly hard.
It's something that Sambit Bal has written about, not this round of meetings, but the last round. He wrote a column about the danger of everyone wanting to get back at them a bit too much. They think this is the time to even the cards, and that might yet come back and bite cricket in the backside if India feel really put upon.
Exactly that. And, you know, you've got to hope that it's going to be a fascinating meeting in June, and you would assume that there's going to be an awful lot of shouting and an awful lot of horse trading and hopefully a compromise that suits everyone. But, you know, my instincts lie with the new distribution. Of course they do. It's better for the game that the finances are shared. But it also, you cannot escape the fact that India makes the game go round, and without India happy with how the game works, the game can't work as well as it should.
George, do you think there's any danger of the game heading towards another sort of scenario that there was with World Series cricket divide? If India feel pushed to the wall, are they big enough, powerful enough to go, we've had enough, we're going to try and go it alone, or we're going to make a statement about it, or kind of pull out of the mainstream of, I mean, obviously there's this threat hanging over the Champions Trophy, which, as Andrew says, is probably unlikely to come to anything at the end of the day. But longer term, do you think if India feels so put upon that it could divide the game?
Yes, it wouldn't surprise me if they pulled out of the Champions Trophy, and I very much hope the ICC...
Just finished the rota, George, don't say that.
I hope that the ICC are talking to the West Indies about replacing them as we speak, because that has to be in place. And that's an interesting example, because who would it hurt if they pulled out? It would hurt everybody. It would hurt them, I mean, because they'll get the mother of all legal actions. But it will hurt everybody. It's not going to hurt the ECB in particular. You know, these are ICC events. So that revenue is already distributed and taken care of. It's not really anything to do with the ECB. Yeah, they could definitely go on their own. And I think it's actually pretty inevitable that there'll be a second IPL season a year. And what you're seeing, it's pretty obvious, really. You're seeing
I don't know whether it's dying might be too strong a word, but you'll see in Test cricket desperate trouble because of the growth of T20 leagues. And at some stage, people will have to either accept the Test cricket's going to be a niche thing, a bit like women's Test cricket, or, you know, start to fight the other way a little bit. And I would go that way. But could the BCCI take their bat and strop off? Yeah, they could. And I think there are some people within it who would like to do that, because I already think that not long ago they didn't see a future of playing Test cricket, say, within 5 years. Really, as soon as that. And this may accelerate the process. But you hope that there are calm heads involved. You hope that you know, they can find a way through it. But yeah, definitely all these things are possible.
Well, if India pull out, Virat Kohli can redo our rota for the tournament, because I've had enough of it. Right, we'll move on from ICC politics for now. And to finish the show, we'll go completely polar opposite and we'll just have a quick look back over the opening weeks of the English county season, a far more genteel and, shall I say, laid-back topic we can talk about. It's a shame Butch isn't with us, though, this week, because I'm sure he and George could have a hearty discussion over the fact the ECB have crossed the final bridge in regards to the new T20 tournament. Those votes are always going to pass, although there were a couple of dissenting voices. So we'll focus on action on the field. Surrey, the Division 1 pace setters in the Championship, only just ahead of Lancashire, it should be added. George, you've seen Surrey twice. Impressed with them, and I mean, they're talked about every season because of the deep pockets they have as being contenders. Does it look now that this might be their time?
Well, it definitely might be. I mean, I think they're a club that are doing a lot right. You know, people talk about the deep pockets, and I mean, they make a lot of money. They have a similar turnover to the West Indies Cricket Board, don't they? So they're
and less politics.
Yeah. So I think it's fair enough. They invest their money how the hell they want. And yep, they have a couple of big signings, didn't they, over the winter? But they're also producing players. I mean, people might argue that the Currans aren't homegrown and stuff, but they came through the academy. You know, they put at least one of them to school, didn't they, through school? So they're playing six or so homegrown players each game. Terrific. They look a really good side, tremendously strong top seven. They've got a tail, and in the last few years, sides with tails haven't won the championship. Sides who are scoring runs in that lower middle order have won the championship. So that's something to worry about. But, you know, that doesn't really matter. The point is that a sleeping giant is no longer sleeping, and it's contributing for English cricket, and they're fantastic to watch. So, you know, who cares, really, whether they win or not? They're a terrific club going in the right direction.
Another team that's perhaps come up on the blind side at the start of the season a bit, although we've talked about much in pre-season, Hampshire have started well in the championship, especially their victory over Yorkshire. Without opening the whole Colpack can of worms again, which was a story George broke, obviously, in January with Kyle Abbott quitting South Africa. When a team like Hampshire starts to win like that with the imports, does it justify the imports? You look at the polar opposite of someone like Glamorgan, who can barely string a win together, and they're being criticised for the number of imports they have. When you go down the route of signing these players, non-local players, winning becomes a must-have to justify, and does it justify the move?
Well, I mean, when you take 7-41 to beat the biggest side of the decade, then absolutely it justifies it. But you know what George is saying about Hampshire. Surrey's net contribution to English cricket as the pace setters in the championship. You know, Hampshire are not really a net contributor in the same sense. I mean, they're only in the top flight on account of some dubious politics with Durham's relegation and you know, I'm pleased to see them being competitive, because they've been sort of bubbling along, not really here or there for a while. But yeah, they're not a team that I feel you want to warm to in quite the same way as some of the teams on the circuit at the moment. And, you know, the overload of Colpacks does play a part in that, I think. That said, I mean, Kyle Abbott is a stupendous bowler, a great loss to international cricket and a fine signing. And it was an amazing win, nearly made it two wins out of two against Yorkshire, which is, you know, that's quite a statement to open the season with for a side that needs to justify itself.
Just a couple of players I want to quickly pick out because they offer an interesting, I guess, comparison, also challenge when it comes to England selection. You've got Liam Livingstone, who they've decided not to give a go to these Ireland games. They might have done if they'd wanted to, along with the likes of Tom Curran, maybe. He's obviously churning out runs for Lancashire. You've got Gary Ballance, who was with England in the winter, had a pretty difficult time. He's churning out runs as Yorkshire captain now. Does that highlight, in a way, that the challenge for an England selector at this time of the season? You see someone like Ballance who's on the fringes. Do they go back to Gary Ballance when the test matches resume, or is someone like Liam Livingstone the future? I guess that's the art of selection, really. You're looking at those two players.
Yeah, but that's a good problem, eh? I mean, that's a fantastic problem. That's what you want. They're different to a huge degree. Obviously, there's a lot of Joss Butler in Liam Livingstone, isn't there? And he looks, he looks a terrifically exciting prospect. I don't know, I haven't seen masses of him. I've seen masses of Gary Ballance. And, I've always thought he's a really good player. He hasn't changed. That technique has not changed.
So does that then suggest that maybe he won't come again as international cricket?
I think he will. Right. So I never had a problem with the technique. So the technique's very Treskovic. It's actually quite Peter Handscomb too. Watching them back together is remarkable. Never seen a player play as far back. He's almost behind the keeper, Handscomb. It's extraordinary. I think that there are pros and cons with that technique. It's not pretty, but he doesn't fish outside off stump, which is the pro. And he can get caught. He can look a bit dodgy against the short ball. Look, he said in the winter, he's not going to do it. He's not going to change it. He's going to do it better. And I think he is doing it better. Haven't seen him against a really quick bowler. But I did see, one of the England coaches that I said, one of the problems with Ballance is he doesn't really pull. Well, I saw him pull England's leading test wicket taker for six the other day. So he is pulling. His balance looks good. Confidence is a huge thing with him, with all of them. But his confidence was hit hugely by being dropped after the Lord's Test against Australia. Really massively dropped. And then he was recalled, and you can understand why, because there's something there that you can see is test quality, after one good innings at Scarborough. And so he was maybe recalled a bit early. I thought he was unlucky in Asia. Good. Look back at those dismissals. They're really good balls. He can't keep saying that, and I don't want to make excuses for him. But if you want to, I would think, leave him in county cricket for a few months, and if there's a vacancy, I'd be interested to see who they take to Australia who's better than him, eh?
I've felt with Ballance this winter, just watching him on Asian pitches, slow, low pitches, with that technique, with a very, very neutral sort of defensive technique, he simply could not get the ball off the square in those conditions, which obviously played a massive part. But it's just maybe with a bit more pace behind the ball against, well, obviously with South Africa coming up and The Ashes coming up. I mean, maybe having a neutral batsman who's going to be that holding role is not a terrible thing to have. I mean, there are not many similarities, but there are similarities with a certain Alistair Cook in his outlook to the game, and he did all right a few years ago in Australia. So.
I don't see him as that sort of player. I really don't. I don't see him as a holding player. I see him as a bludgeoner. He's not a pretty one at all. I know what you mean, but. He can cut anything, can't he? He loves the cut. He can pull. He's good off his legs. He's, I think, quite good against spin, although I admit the evidence doesn't suggest that right now. The worry would be how he plays the short ball, because he tends to duck it or deflect it, and he doesn't really hook. Can he do that in Australia? I don't know. I think we might find out. I think he probably will go. I think he's a really good player, and I think people have said he can't play the swinging ball, he can't play the move. He's got a first-class average of 52 or 53. He was, I think, the third quickest in history to 1,000 test runs. That guy can really play, and he's just... I've said this on Twitter many times, I'll buy your Gary Ballance shares every day right now, because that guy's hugely undervalued. He's terrific.
Just the final point I want to make on the show this week. It's a quick look at Division 2, but I mean, Notts have looked a powerhouse in that division. I mean, that attack they had, James Patterson, Stuart Broad, Harry Gurney, Jake Ball. I think I've missed someone out from that, but that's a pretty good attack for Division 2. Them and Kent have pulled away. Luke Fletcher's the one. Unfortunately, run out for 92. That was one of the moments of the season so far, sadly, for Luke Fletcher, wasn't it? And I know Durham's point deduction is giving the table a bizarre look at the moment, but Do you think with the 8-10 split they've gone down, and George, try and keep the answer under 20 minutes, are we heading, do you think there's going to be a split to almost creating a third tier there within County Championship cricket?
Yes, there might be that temptation. One of the things I've done in the last few week or so is see lots of the Royal London games. And have you noticed how many Division 2 teams are beating Division 1 teams, or how many smaller clubs are beating Division 1 clubs? You know, the split is not as big as people think it is. How long have Surrey been a Division 1 club? 18 months? Where are Warwickshire going to be next year? You know, the split is obviously finance matters. I think they will go that way because I think that all the money's been made in T20. People will tell you that's the future. Test cricket can still be terrific entertainment. It can still be just as good entertainment, if slightly different than T20. And I think it would be a mistake to go that way. I would think a bit outside the box. And if you're going to have three divisions, I would either try and bring in a couple more teams. I don't know. I would, this is slightly off the wall, but I would be interested in talking to Glamorgan about becoming Wales and leaving Championship cricket entirely, leaving the ECB, and offer them at least two internationals a year against England and one of the touring sides. And I would do that because I don't think they've contributed for a long time. I think they need a kick up the bum, and I think that they may be able to play to their strengths more that way, because they're not producing players. They built a test ground that had to be bailed out by the taxpayer. There's a lot going wrong there, and actually they could have a strength if they played to the nationalistic bent, which is fine. And England, under this ECB regime, I think would be much more supportive of their attempts to grow as a independent cricketing nation. There would obviously be a transition period where they would need financial support from the ECB to do that, and the ICC. But I would think outside the box and look at doing that with them.
Well, that went rogue, didn't it?
Well, yes, that teaches me for asking a question about Championship cricket and whether we're getting a third tier. Blimey, no, that's completely thrown me off course.
Because people think I'm always supportive of the counties, and I generally am. I love the county system, and I genuinely believe
we haven't noticed.
But if they're not fulfilling their obligations, then they have to be punished for it. They have to do their job. And Glamorgan are consistently not. And they aren't even signing Carl Abbotts. They are signing some second-tier Colpack players. I'm not anti-Colpack at all. I think there's a balance to be gained. But, you know, are they contributing to English cricket? Are they? I mean, you know, are they?
Well, I think we might leave it on that bombshell and let the listeners decide.
And when was the last time they did?
Well, the last England player was Simon Jones, wasn't it?
Yeah, but it's not just England players, because, you know, James Harris is a terrific player. Mm. And Tom Maynard was a terrific player, you know. So it's not there are some good players. You don't just have to produce England players to be contributing, but you've got to be producing players quite regularly. And you've got to be producing good pitches, which they haven't done. They've got a new groundsman now, so fair play to them. You've got to not be reliant on the taxpayer. You know, there's quite a lot of things. If you've got 18 clubs contributing, I could argue the same thing about Derbyshire, by the way.
But we are running out of time.
But you're not, Derbyshire aren't about to go their own way. You know, there's not a potential massive strength there, which Glamorgan have. You know, a real potential win-win situation where actually, all of a sudden, isn't it exciting that England could play Wales and Scotland and Ireland in a home championship? That could be a really good thing. So it's not entirely negative. You can't say that about Derbyshire. You know, Derbyshire aren't going to play England, Ireland, Wales, are they? So, you know, we need to do better with some of these clubs. It's not just about praising them. But look at the Royal London results. Worcestershire are probably the best white ball team I've seen this year. They whipped Nottinghamshire the other day. It was a fantastic game.
One thing I would say on the three division, I'll keep this very, very brief. On the three division notion, I remember several, it must be 20 years ago now, when it was proposed by Lord McLaurin.
The conferences.
Yeah. And the Wisden Cricket Monthly's response to that was a splash on the front page, balmy. And that was 20 years ago, but it doesn't seem quite so balmy now. So well, God knows where we are.
County cricket sends us all balmy from time to time. So I think that's a good moment to leave the show. I was going to briefly talk about the Royal London Trophy, but I think the whole discussion on Glamorgan sort of taken things on a slightly different direction. So we'll leave the show there this week. Thank you for watching and listening to us this week. We'll be back a little bit closer to the Champions Trophy to look at how the teams are shaping up. But for now, it's thanks to Andrew and George, and thanks to you for listening and watching us on ESPNcricketinfo.com.